Welcome to this week's episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. On this week's episode, we talk about the recent Iran attack and how it's a game changer in the Middle East. Let's get started. For many of my regular listeners, you may have realized I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and I just need to apologize at the beginning of this episode. Unfortunately, I had recently lost my voice, which does make doing a podcast a little bit difficult. On this week's episode, obviously we're going to have to talk about what's been going on over the last few weeks, but most importantly, the major game-changing moment that happened yesterday that I'm sure most of you are aware of by now, and I'm sure you've heard plenty of commentary, and hopefully I can provide a little bit more background and information on this very complex topic that's been going on for years, essentially, leading up and culminating into yesterday. Without going into the massive history of the issues between Iran and Israel, we can just sum it up by suggesting that ever since the 70s, when Iran had a revolution that brought in this Islamic extremist government, they have not been the best friends to Israel. When I spoke to some Persian friends of mine many years ago, I asked them once why they seemed to dislike Israel so much. And very poignantly, this person said to me, it's because they're a revolutionary government. And as long as it's going to be a revolutionary government, you sort of need someone to fight against. Otherwise, people start looking at the actual government for why their lives aren't very good. Kind of what we see in Gaza. So as long as the revolutionary government has Israel to blame and Israel as the scapegoat of all their problems, and in addition to the United States, of course, it gives them a reason for existing and a reason for why life isn't great in their country. And it helps radicalize these people to fight for the government against these supposed enemies. Iran for many years has been exporting their terrorism through money and weapons and all kinds of things around the region, and it's essentially caused a huge destabilization of the region. Iran essentially has proxy groups in almost every country in the Middle East. These proxy groups that we hear about are people like Hamas and Hezbollah, and more recently we hear a lot more about the Houthi rebels, who again are extremists backed by Iran. But they are essentially all over the Middle East, in pretty much every country. And the reason for this is to destabilize other countries, to have their fingers in the web of all of the other countries in the Middle East, and hopefully, in their eyes, maintain control over the entire Middle East. They essentially want to be the superpower of the Middle East, which is also why they don't get along very well with Saudi Arabia, who also wants to be the superpower of the Middle East. Saudi Arabia, being Sunni Muslims, versus the Iranians, who are Shiite Muslims, don't get along very well. Think about it similarly to sort of the Cold War era, where you have a superpower in the Soviet Union versus the superpower of the United States, very similar to what's going on in the Middle East right now. And certain countries in the Middle East are picking sides, such as Qatar, who tends to be on the side of Iran, whereas many other Arab nations like to side with Saudi Arabia. And everybody is vying for the superpower title. This is also why Iran is so desperate to get a nuclear weapon, knowing that, of course, once they get that nuclear weapon, they essentially are the big superpower in town, and nobody's going to mess with them, and nobody would ever try and attack them. So this is some of the backstory behind the current situation with Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthi rebels. We have the destabilization of the region by Iran. It is not at all a coincidence that just before October 7th, Israel and the Saudi royal family were talking about normalizing their relations, which essentially would bring Israel and Saudi Arabia closer together, and therefore isolating Iran even more. This would be a massive problem for Iran, who is already isolated in many ways, but this would ally them with the United States and Israel and become its own superpower, making Iran even less relevant in the region. Iran wanted to make sure that this didn't happen, and therefore they made sure to have an attack that would split the Arab world, knowing, of course, that Israel would defend itself against Gaza and Hamas, and therefore cause the entire world with their PR system to hate Israel and to call out Israel for the way they treat Muslims and all these lies that we find on propaganda machines known as Instagram and TikTok. And they believed that this would spread the Arab world apart from Israel, and it kind of worked a little bit. Until the Saudi royal prince recently came out and said that normalization would still happen following the current conflict. clearly nothing is really happening for Iran right now that is working out for them. Hamas is on the run. They are almost wiped out. Hezbollah is kind of staying out, maybe because they want to stay out or maybe because Iran is telling them to stay out. But the reality is that Israel is doing pretty well at eliminating the Iran threat. This is when we get into things closer to the current day. Recently, many of us have heard within the last few weeks about this strike that Israel did in Damascus, Syria. When you hear it on the news, you hear the Iranian propaganda version, which is that an Iranian consulate or embassy was hit by the Israelis, which is actually completely untrue. It was a building next to the consulate or the embassy that was hit, and it was an Iranian building, not the actual consulate, that was hit, leaving the consulate completely untouched, where IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, essentially their terrorist wing, were meeting with many high-up officials discussing future plans for how they plan on attacking Israel. So they thought they'd have a secret meeting in Syria, not realizing that Israel would of course get word of this through their intelligence and could not help but take out such a juicy target. Of all of the high-level people in the IRGC who planned October 7th in one room at the same time, and Israel did a precision strike and took out that building and all of those people without touching anybody else. If you've seen the pictures, it is quite remarkable. The funny thing is, Iran doesn't really even deny that the IRGC people were there in Syria meeting, or the fact that they were all terrorists planning their next attack. It's kind of funny when they don't even deny it. However, once these IRGC people were killed and it was on Iranian media, Iran, who is trying to be a superpower in the region, couldn't let this stand without some type of retribution or show of force, just for their own people to see that they're not allowing this to happen or to show the other Arab nations that they won't take this sitting down. So fairly quickly, Iran came out and said very publicly that they will soon have a strike somehow against the state of Israel. This brings us to this past weekend, when little trickles of information were coming out about how Iran was planning their strike against the state of Israel. The United States warned Israel to tell them that an imminent threat was coming, and everybody waited with bated breath. At first, it was reported that maybe a dozen unmanned drones that were meant to be suicide drones were being flown from Iran to Israel. After some time, it turns out 170 UAVs were fired from Iran into Israel, along with 120 ballistic missiles and 30 cruise missiles that were sent directly towards Israeli populations. Even though Israel was ready for this attack, I don't know if anyone expected this level of attack. The idea that some experts are suggesting is that they were trying to overwhelm Israeli defenses. Things like the Iron Dome, the David Sling, many of these systems that are meant to track single, double, triple targets may not do too well with over 300 targets. However, the Israeli systems, as well as many other things we're going to talk about in a moment, stopped 99% of the missiles and drones that were trying to attack and kill Israelis. Thankfully, in addition to all of the amazing defense systems that Israel has developed and implemented to stop these rockets and things from flying into Israeli airspace, we saw a lot of allies come to our defense, and some for legitimate reasons, others for not so legitimate reasons. Let's start first with the legitimate ones, that is the United States, who moved their warships into the eastern Mediterranean Sea in order to be able to shoot down some of these drones, and we also saw the British have their air force take down a number of drones as well, which was an amazing thing to see that our allies are willing to stand up in situations like this. The air defenses, Israeli planes, British planes, American drones and planes all took down hundreds of these flying objects that were destined to hit Israeli civilians. There were two countries that helped us out last night that were maybe a little less altruistic, but nonetheless, we're pretty thankful for them helping us yesterday. And that is the country of Jordan and the Saudi Arabian royal family. The country of Jordan, who's been an ally of Israel since the 1990s, really hasn't done too much to show that allyship. Sure, they have good relations and there's trade and they sort of help one another when it comes to terrorism, but Jordan recently has not really been Israel's ally trying to show their own Palestinian Arab community that they're going to stand tough against Israel in the current conflict. However, Jordan last night not only closed their airspace to make it easier to spot these drones that were coming over, but the Jordanians actually allowed the Israelis to use their airspace to allow the Israeli planes to fly into Jordan in order to shoot down these unmanned drones and these missiles, something that I don't know has ever been done before. Jordan also came out and said that they too would shoot down any kind of drones that entered their airspace, which, yes, was very helpful to the Israelis because the Israelis had so many moving targets to hit, but working in coordination with Jordan would allow them to have to hit a few less if Jordan was to take them out for them. However, let's keep in mind that Jordan is in between Israel and Iran, and those drones would be illegally going through Jordanian airspace, and therefore they obviously don't want those drones to land in their backyard. So sure enough, it's not completely to save Israel, it's also to save themselves. Which is the same story when we get to Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia is also between Israel and Iran,
and they too don't want these drones to land in their backyard. So as much as, yes, it did help Israel that Saudi Arabia was on their side, really they were actually on their own side, but it also helped Israel. Which is kind of the point to the whole normalization between the Saudis and Israel. They both have a mutual enemy, which is Iran. So thanks to our neighbors and our allies, we made it through this incredibly dangerous night with literally no damage to the state of Israel. It is nothing short of a miracle when you think about it. But what comes next? The funny thing was, people weren't really sure how this would end. And then all of a sudden, after all of the ballistic missiles were fired and all of the drones were released, Iran goes to the United Nations and says to them, "Our deal is concluded at this point," suggesting to the Israelis, "This is all we're going to do. We're not going to go any further. This is retribution for what you did to us, and now we're done." Which is kind of sad and pathetic because you can't just shoot 200 or 300 rockets and drones into a sovereign nation over the airspace of other sovereign nations and just decide we're done. The Israeli war cabinet, essentially the government now because we are currently at war with Gaza, has decided they will come up with some type of plan for getting back at Iran for this current situation. Unfortunately, the international world is being typical when they come to Israel and giving a sort of double standard situation here. According to U.S. reports, President Biden spoke with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and told him to, quote, take this as a win, telling him that be proud that you'd stopped 99% of the missiles, no one was hurt, let's call this a win, you can rub it in Iran's face for losing, but don't go and try and get back at them for what they did. Which, you know, sure, makes sense for calming things down. On the other hand, when you don't show force back, does that mean that Iran can now cross the line even further? Maybe next time shooting more rockets or giving less notice or some other variation of what they just did if there's no consequences to it? I hate to point out the obvious fact here, which is that the United States telling Israel, hey, call this a win, just let sleeping dogs lie, is pretty pathetic, considering the fact that on September 11th, when New York was attacked, the United States went to war for 20 years in various countries that had various relations to the actual conflict. Whereas here we have a direct threat from Iran, and you're supposed to just let sleeping dogs lie? It's kind of a little bit of a double standard here. We're not sure yet what's going to come out of the US or the G7 countries as to how they should deal with this issue, but the United States has made it incredibly clear that they will not support Israel attacking Iran directly and will take no part in it. Obviously, nobody wants this to escalate to a bigger war, but I think we really need to change this idea that we have right now that Iran, as long as they're not attacking from their own area, is somehow not involved in arming Hezbollah and Hamas. The fact that the IRGC people were killed in Syria planning their next attack with their proxies proves that they directly are related to these situations. So why are we pretending that as long as they only hurt Israel through Hezbollah and only hurt it through Hamas and the Houthi rebels, then that's okay. Israel doesn't need to respond. I think it's about time we stop pretending that Iran has nothing to do with the other conflicts and they are just some innocent bystander. They are behind all of the issues in the Middle East. I was recently saying to my wife, which I thought was a very profound thought, imagine a world without Iran, or an Iran that's not the crazy Ayatollah Iran. Almost every Arab country, and Israel, and the West, would literally be in a better place. If you think about the Iranian people, they wouldn't be living under oppression. If you think about the Lebanese people, they wouldn't be living under Hezbollah and all of the rockets and the war that they create. If you think about the people of Gaza, that Iran wouldn't be giving Hamas millions of dollars to go and fight and start wars with Israel. Every country in the Middle East would be safer. Every country in the West would be safer without the Islamic regime in Iran calling all the shots and trying to flex its muscle in the Middle East. In the end, unfortunately right now, we're just kind of waiting and seeing to figure out if Israel's going to respond, how they're going to respond. Is it going to be overt? Is it going to be covert? Is it going to be cyber? The United Nations and the G7 are meeting in order to discuss this current situation, which, to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised the UN even bothers because they usually just ignore anything that happens to Israel. My prediction, which I think is a safe bet considering how close Iran and Russia are these days, and China by extension, probably would suggest that the Security Council will get essentially nothing because Russia or China would actually veto anything that was anti-Iran. So UN will probably be pretty useless in this situation, as it typically is, unless it's calling out Israel for something. But remember, not only did Iran attack a sovereign nation, that is Israel, but they invaded multiple countries' airspace with weapons, completely against international law. I don't know if this is going to stand, but we'll see what happens. The G7 countries have met without Russia and China. However, considering how people have been treating Israel recently with the whole Gaza-Hamas issue, I really don't have a lot of faith that they're going to come out with some type of actual plan on keeping Israel safe and stopping Iran from ever doing this again. I'm sure there'll be some vague condemnation of Iran and just suggesting that everything should cool down and Israel should just allow this to happen, which is definitely not anything any of those G7 countries would allow happening to their own country, ironically. But one unintended consequence, I think, by this current situation in Iran is proving exactly how close Iran's enemies are to one another. That is to say, people like Saudi Arabia and Israel and Jordan and all of these Arab nations who are not aligned with Iran really have a reason to get closer to Israel. As I said in a previous podcast, the Abraham Accords were based almost entirely on anti-Iranian Sunni Muslim countries wanting to form a NATO-type agreement in support of one another against and isolating Iran. And this situation only proves further how much these countries need these types of agreements and need to be working with Israel and the United States to make sure that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon and stops being able to shoot rockets through the Middle East with no consequences. I don't really know what this is going to mean long term. Obviously, a new bar has been set that now the option is open for Iran to attack Israel directly and maybe for Israelis to attack Iran directly. And this could open up a large can of worms. The fact that for the first time ever, Iran actually invaded other Arab airspaces in order to attack Israel proper from its own territory is definitely a game changer. Since we finished recording this episode, something has just come out in the Times of Israel that seems very poignant to this podcast. According to the Times of Israel, Saudi officials say that Iran engineered the war in Gaza in order to ruin the normalization with the Saudi Arabian country. At this point, it seems all but official that Iran was behind all of this, and for that specific reason. This has been another episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. Don't forget to check us out on social media at jdr.podcast and check out some of our other episodes on your favorite podcast source. We'll see you next time.